Someone's went in.
Welcome.
Okay. Well, thank you all for coming. In case you, at this late time in the afternoon, are not sure, this class is How Long Should a Preacher Stay Put? Perspectives from Seasoned Ministers and Elder.
Yes.
Should be added. We appreciate you being here today. I'm not going to go through the biographies of each of the three of us. You can see that in the handout that you received. It's along about the last page. But Dr. Wayne Winrow has been about 40 years in preaching experience plus, most of it at the Reseda Boulevard Church of Christ in Reseda, California. Steve Inc. has years of ministry experience and is in his 13th year as an elder at the Campbell Church of Christ. Steve is a man who, he's kind of the Renaissance man. He's done a lot of things in his life. Won't go into that. His wife is here and you know, don't want to tell tales on him. I'm Dave Schultz. I've been in ministry for about 41 years. And the last 28, I've been at the Ventura Church of Christ, just up the coast here in Ventura. As the handout says, the purposes of this class are to consider the potential values and possible drawbacks of preachers serving one congregation for many years. Steve made the point to me that this really has to do in principle not only with preachers, but any minister that you would hire, whether it's a children's minister, educational minister, youth minister, whatever. The principles all apply. We focused on preaching ministers because that's where most of the emphasis tends to go in a congregation, and there's a certain role of influence and leadership that goes with that position. And so that's why we focused it on this. Your handout has a variety of things. It has a piece on page 5, I believe it is, about some of the pitfalls of having a long-term minister. We're not going to get into that per se. I think that page speaks for itself. We're going to approach it from the positive standpoint. All of us believe that there is more value in having a long-term ministry, whether preacher or other ministry, than having a short-term one. And we'll endeavor in these next 2 days to kind of share our thoughts with you about that. And so we're coming at it from the positive standpoint. Like other fellowships in Protestantism, white ministers in churches of Christ have historically had short tenures, typically 2 to 7 years. That is changing, and we're very thankful for that. But the Hispanic and African American experience is different, and Dr. Winrow will be presenting some thoughts on that in just a few minutes. In his 2016 book, Long-Term Ministry, Paul Rozier writes this: the American Lutheran Church sees a 20% annual turnover of clergy, with pastors moving on an average of every 4 years. A Southern Baptist pastor moves on average every 18 to 24 months. Now, bear in mind, this is a 2016 book. This is not ancient history. This is now. And then the two most troublesome statistics. 85% of U.S. seminary graduates entering ministry leave within 5 years. And then the second piece of that, 90% of all U.S. pastors will not last to retirement. That should say a whole variety of things, and we don't have time to get into all of that. Really, these 2 days are more of an introduction into this subject, and we want to encourage you to delve further into it, whatever your role may be. The church may mirror society at large, in all fairness, which appears restless at in the pursuit of the new, the attractive, and the lively, quickly discarding something when it shows signs of weariness. Does that sound familiar in terms of preachers, a congregation's approach, or an eldership's approach to preachers? Whatever the culture,
Rapid ministerial turnover may impact the welfare of the churches and their ministers. Thank you. Research on church growth shows that it is not until a minister has served for 5 to 10 years in his church that a bias towards growth becomes evident. No, thank you. Leaders of congregations, as a result of this, must be visionary. I would like to just say that. I'd like to take the rest of my time and just say that over and over and over, because of so many reasons within congregations. And it doesn't matter culturally, ethnically, racially, whatever. The church needs visionary leaders at every congregation. That makes such a difference. They must think about the long term of God's work in a community and beyond that community. That will necessarily include the role and the tenure of ministers within their vision. That has to be a key foundational part of it. From our long ministry experiences, Steve, Duane, and myself believe that in most cases, not every case, but in most cases, ministers should stay in congregations for a long time. We understand why this cannot happen everywhere. So we have provided in this handout the pitfalls of the piece that I provided to you. However, we're going to be offering the reasons why and how we believe that ministers can and should be in place a long time. Now, here is our caveat. The reasons we will give to support our position will not appeal to scriptural precedents, but instead to spiritual practicalities. I mentioned earlier the different tenure experiences of white, Hispanic, and African-American ministers. And so Dr. Winrow is going to address that. Duane?
Okay. In a pre-meeting, we decided that to do this seminar effectively, then we have to coincide with schedule. That simply means that I've got to fly. I got 12 minutes, and I don't want to be infringed upon Steve's time. But yet, I want to communicate. It's important, you know, that we communicate the subject matter. So, I'm going to be flying in, and hopefully you'll, you know, get the message of what we're trying to communicate. I don't even have time to get nervous. But however, and of course, you know anything about people, preachers of my hue, you know, this is very, very, very challenging to do this. But let me just say, you know, that we decided to first, you know, set forth a foundation, a platform, you know, and that is the acknowledgement of the fact that when we talk about tenure, we're talking about this in a context of difference in churches of Christ. There are leadership models that vary, you know, in the churches of Christ. Two existing models of leadership, you know, in church. One you might see represented in a predominant number of black congregations, African-American congregations, and then the other you may see represented in mainline churches of Christ. Now, and when I say mainline, I'm speaking basically of white, Caucasian, you know, congregations. But African-American churches, even with elders, usually function with a man at the top. It is a misnomer to call this model a cultural model because it is typical of most postmodern churches as well as independent Protestant denominations. You see many of the mega churches, you know, operating with a man at the top. While it correlates to African culture, it conflicts. This model usually conflicts with Euro-American concepts of leadership. Mainline churches of Christ, mainly Caucasian, a plurality of men forming eldership that presides over the congregation, has authority over even the evangelists. African American churches under sponsorship of white congregations, many came into existence under sponsorship of white congregations, accepted this view but strongly resisted it. Young progressives among Caucasians, you know, young white preachers today, you know, have begun to debunk the model, you know, that has been traditional in churches of Christ. I began to learn this, you know, as I engaged in discussions leading up to this workshop, especially in our breakfasts and places where many churches that are being planted, preachers are talking about not putting in place what the traditional eldership model have been, but implementing a system called accountability, you know, and that is getting other preachers, you know, to hold them accountable, you know, but not wanting to put in place the traditional model of the eldership. But what is the importance of this? The importance and relevance of this, of the leadership model, number one, the correlation between tenure and healthy churches, as will be referenced in blogs, books, and articles, has little to do with longevity in and of itself. It has more to do with the assigned role and responsibilities of that person that is called the preacher. You know, you can take, for example, under the traditional plurality leadership model, the charisma, usually the charisma of the evangelist has endured what Peter Berger would call routinization. That is, once an organization usually starts with a charismatic leader. After that charismatic leader dies, that is of great influence. Usually the people close to him, the charisma of that person is dispensed to a group of men. You know, that's what Peter Berger refers to in sociology of religion as the routinization, you know, factor. I don't want to get into that. That's something else. But let me first just go back and look at the origin of our traditional model in Churches of Christ, what I choose to refer to as the Presbyterian model. First of all, it is believed to have originated with Alexander Campbell, who was a member, former member of the Presbyterian Church. And of course, in his early writings, you know, he quite naturally, you know, promoted the Presbyterian model, but began to question the veracity of it. And I want to show you, in a lot of these, this is not often brought out in terms of the position of the early Restorationists as it relates to the question of church organization. So you'll see, you know, and I just want to put up a few quotes. You'll see that even Alexander Campbell began to evolve in his understanding, in his view of church leadership. We will see first, this is early development. A quote by Alexander Campbell says, it adds to the evidence already possessed that the whole subject of church organization is as yet very imperfectly understood and still more imperfectly practiced. Some among us are fearful of such a discussion. Now, this was when they were setting up these restoration churches. And usually, you know, this is happening under the auspices of an evangelist. And so that's why it became even a question, you know, the issue of the role of the evangelist, you know, and his place in the church began to be questioned, you know, early in, you know, mainland white churches. So he said, this is unreasonable in terms of being fearful of the discussion. He said, for the discussion must come about sooner or later. We plead for calm, cool, protracted discussion of the subject. Then we see, again, Alexander Campbell writes, later, as his view began to unfold, next to the work of the evangelist is that of a pastor or elder in importance for the perfecting of the saints in Christian character. Then we see later, you know, in his piece on organization, he writes, the Churches of Christ has a living ministry as well as a dead ministry, embalmed in the living oracles. Of these, evangelists are first, bishops are second, the deacons are third. Evangelists preach the gospel, baptize the converts, constitute the churches, set in order, and keep them in order. You know, so this is Alexander. This is why in his letter writings, when he began to make reference to church organizations, he would never simply refer to his own views, but he started quoting and using the work of what we would call denominational pastors, you know, in terms of their, you know, view of church order. We see this also in other early Restorationists such as Tolbert Fanning in 1856. He wrote in an article in the Millennial Harbinger, Permanent Orders. He writes, the permanent officers of the church are deacons, bishops, and evangelists. Every elder is an authorized teacher. Thirdly, the organization is not complete without evangelists. Enough, because he was writing to a professor of Bethany College, and he began to say that Professor Milligan had wrote many things that was not quite clear about what his position was about the evangelist, but later he said, enough, however, we find to show very clearly the importance of the office of the evangelist in the conversion of the world and the preservation of the congregation. Then we see a guy by the name of William L. Hayden in 1894 writes in the article of Practical Thesis on Organization, he writes, from the apostles, the authority of Christ descends to the evangelist. And then we see in W.K. Pendleton. Now, this is when the tide began to change, because W.K. Pendleton took over the editorialship of the Millennial Harbinger. And what Pendleton did, you know, that is William Kimbrook Pendleton, he went back to Alexander Campbell's early positions, you know, and began to advocate that. And many, you know, caught on to that because, first of all, it corresponded with the ethos, the cultural ethos of the day, you know, which promoted democratic values, you know, and that type of thing. You know, as one might guess, being that the Churches of Christ formed in the incubus or in the crucible of the Enlightenment. Thus we have, as Pendleton writes, thus we have a careful induction gathered from Scripture that all these teach us concerning two official ranks in the Christian church, to wit, elders and deacons. Now what they're saying is, you know, Pendleton is beginning to advocate that there are only two orders in the organization of the church, that's elders and deacons, meaning that the evangelist is not a part of that. He's not a part of the primary organization of the church. This was taken on by James Callan in 1866. In Chronicles, he writes, to accomplish this, much is due to the labors and efficiency of elders and deacons. They are the only officers known in the church as belonging to the primary organization. Evangelists are sent out. You get that? Notice in Chronicles, did I just quote that? They are the only officers. Okay. And then in R.W. Grimsley. Now, keep in mind, they're taking up, you know, what is being advocated in Millennial Harbinger as it now is being edited, editorialized by Pendleton, you know, William Kimbrough. And what they're saying is, in his book called The Church and Its Elders, he writes, we have shown through this book that elders of the church are the overseers of all the work of the church, including that of preaching and teaching. And then W.B. Sweet. Now, this guy, we're coming now to the contemporary time, more modern time. This guy is very important because his pamphlet that he put out, Now That I'm a Christian, that was not only marketed to white churches, but black churches as well. You know, and so you can see his views were pervasive, you know, in terms of the brotherhood. And notice what he says about church organization. The minister or evangelist is guided by the elders to preach the word of God to the congregation. Now, this is significant because in terms of Church of Christ commentaries, you know, we know Leo Bowles. Isn't that right? What does he say about church organization? The work of the evangelist is under the eldership of the church. It is a high crime against God for the preacher to usurp the authority of the eldership and by popular Paul lead people away into scriptural order from the scriptural order of organization of the church. If the evangelist understands New Testament teachings, he is under... He will understand that he is not in office. His is not an office, but a work. You know, so you see these views. Now, I want to hurry and finish. There's another side to this view, and that is the African-American model. I don't call this the African-American model because it is pervasive, you know, in our culture today, and it is pervasive among many Protestant churches, you know, as we all know. But one of the things that we will note when we talk about the preacher in the Protestant church, he is called a pastor. You know, in other words, you know, the idea of the eldership is embodied in this person. You know, and it is this person that is associated with a lot of the writings and articles and blogs that we hear about longevity versus healthy churches. And the reason I bring this out, because when we're talking about longevity, you know, we're not talking about... In other words, healthy churches are not related, you know, to any denuded position of leadership that may be embodied, you know, in a preacher that does not have the role and position that we're reading about in Scripture that you're seeing exercised in these healthy churches where you have longevity, you know, and of the preacher. So, but what does this model look like? And most will say, especially if you study what is called cell-based churches, they use what is called the Jethro principles of leadership. And I believe, you know, as others may believe, that the biblical model of leadership that we read about in the New Testament is predicated upon an Old Testament background. And you'll see this as illustrated in what is called Jethro principles. What we have in this model of leadership is two distinct categories of leadership. Not just one category, but two distinct categories. And that's what I call the prophetic and the pastoral. In other words, pastoral ministry is an outgrowth of prophetic ministry. You know, but there are two distinct categories of leadership. Now, an example. This comes out of Exodus 18. When Jethro was looking at Moses, his father-in-law, and I got to get a good way through this, his father-in-law doing all this, you know, this work, and he said, man, these people are going to wear you out. He said, so what you need to be before the people, you know, is a Godward man. He said, stand before God. So the ministers, the man of God, prophetic role is that of the man of God. You know, he stands in a relationship to the people, but facing toward God. His role is a ministry of prayer, like the apostle said in Acts 6. We're not going to surrender, you know, the ministry of the word and prayer to serve tables. So he says, stand before God for the people so that they may bring the difficulties to God. Ministry of the word. And you shall teach them the statutes and laws. Verse 20. Notice also the administration of the word is associated with the man of God. Show them the way in which they must walk. And the work that they must do. That is translating what God gives in terms of principles and laws into actual, we might say, ministries of the congregation. We call that at Reseda the administration of the word, the administration of the church. And secondly, and the fourth responsibility, he was to appoint pastoral leadership. You shall teach them the statutes and laws. That is, yeah, and place them over. In other words, teach them I'm going so fast. But the point is, he worked to appoint rulers, he said, of tens and thousands, whatever, and that is the place, and place over them to be rulers, thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, rulers of tens, and let them judge the people at all times. Now, what you're going to see is the position of these rulers of the people were not positional, but functional. Because that's what even the Lord taught about leadership. It's not a position, it's a function. The greatest among you should be whom? Your servant. You know, those that serve. So it's not about being up over the people. Literally, it's about being under the folk. You know, serving, equipping, and that type of thing. And then the limitation. Notice these men that were appointed to be rulers of the people. Their limitation was that they were not laborers in the word. They were not professional men in the word. They were laymen in the word. He said, then it shall be that every great matter they shall bring to you, but every small matter they shall judge among themselves. Isn't that right? That's the difference in layman leadership and those that the Bible says labor in the word and doctrine. The Bible says if an elder labors in the word and doctrine, he shall be worthy of what? Of double honor. Isn't that right? You know, in some churches, you know, he don't need to labor. He's just be an elder. But the point is, I don't want to be AFK. The pastoral rulers of the people, notice their relationship to the man of God. When they were appointed, they were not appointed to be over him. They were appointed to be with him. Isn't that right? With him. And so it says, so it shall be easier for you, for they shall bear the burden with you. And then finally, relevance to longevity. How is this related to tenure and longevity? You know, well, this may give a hint. Notice he said, if you do this thing and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure. That's right. Now your ministry is going to last. Isn't that right? But if you don't do it, he says, you're going to get worn out. Thank you very much.
Okay. Dwayne could have gone on for quite a bit longer, I'm sure.
I don't know if you want to add anything or not. No. So I'm here to talk about the benefits of long-term ministry. We're under a kind of leadership where we have an eldership, a multiple, you know, plurality of elderships. We have several ministers. The ministers are under the elders. The elders are under the elders. We specifically talk about that point, how I as an elder am under our eldership and subject to our eldership. So there's no one person that is kind of on top of anything. We're all, you know, working together and corroboratively, basically. So I'm kind of excited about being here. Thank you very much for listening to us. I figure, you know, the title here was How Long Should a Preacher Stay Put? And Perspectives from Seasoned Ministers. I figure that really means it's foggy thoughts from a bunch of old guys. You know? And You know, if you came here looking for a definite number, you know, how many years should you be here? The answer is 17 hours, 3 months, 14 days, 9 hours, 3 minutes, and 22 seconds. Of course, that's not reality, right? We can't pinpoint a particular number and estimate how long somebody should be here. It's basically dependent on a lot of different kinds of things. But we do believe, all three of us believe, in long-term ministers. I interviewed, basically got comments from all of our ministers. We have our preaching minister who is just leaving now, has been there for 24 years. Our children's minister has been there for 26 years. We have a worship minister who's been there for 12 years. Our new preaching minister has been there for 6 years. And then our new youth minister, and Corey is here, wife, has been here for 2 years. So we're on that track for long-term ministers. We want to establish that kind of culture in our church. So, you know, you've got your handout with various points, and this is question number one, the page that deals with question number one. I'm going to hit these, some of them fast, and slow down on some of them. The first question has to do with planning for the long haul. And we know that most churches tend to plan for, you know, like 3 to 5 years is your plan. And oftentimes ministers, as Dave said, don't even last that long. So they can't even see the plan through. One of our ministers said that knowing that we will be there for the long haul means we can attack this ministry with a big picture mentality of 10 years plus. So with that culture of the long-term ministry, you can sit there, you can really reach out there and say, what do I need to do to reach out to people, you know, 5, 7, 10, 12 years from now, and try and plan for that. Long-term ministers do work with goals and try and plan things out. In business, you almost always do this. Every year where I work in the trust department of a bank, and every year they want our goals established. And so you work towards those goals and try and do things that are accomplishing that. The point number three here says there's a point leader that's maintained. You have a consistency in that person that's up front. And, you know, like it or not, the preacher is usually the most visible person, and the person that's most often articulating the goals, the philosophy, the vision for the church. And so having consistency with that person up front is really a valuable tool. Anytime you bring somebody else in, it creates a different kind of view, and the preacher is the one that usually articulates it through express statements of the vision, through the things that he preaches about, and through even the emphasis of what's presented. And then we're all there to support him, too. People identify with this kind of person. And it's tremendous influence. This preacher has tremendous influence. Number four, long-term minister knows the needs of the congregation. One of our ministers said, there is a personal ministry satisfaction in being involved in people's lives long-term. Doing weddings and funerals and counseling with people you have known for years. Same with teaching classes. So, you know, just the fact that you're there and you know the people, because, you know, the fact is you come into a new church and you may have heard certain things about the people, and it may be right or may not be right. And you get to know those people as you interact with them time after time, over and over again. There's a handout back there, yes. And another one of our ministers said, our 26-year ministry, the coolest thing in interacting with people in their 20s and 30s who were children in the children's ministry when I arrived. I'm still asked to counsel and advise by those folks on occasion. And this has been fun, cool, and I think it's valuable and important. So we've got several ministers, our two that have been there the longest, that have been watching people grow up. I mean, they may have started as infants, and now they're in their 20s or something, or they may have been in their 40s, and now they're approaching 70, you know. But they've been able to watch these people grow, and they've been there with those people at each stage of their life. So that's a tremendous impact on the person's life that you can't get with somebody new, because you have to build that trust. By having long-term ministers, there's less frequent disruption. Woodrow Wilson said, if you want to make enemies, try to change something. You know, and we know that. Anytime you change people, there's problems. There are always people who say, I like the old guy better, you know, and the new guy, you got to get used to this person because he's different. He's just a little bit different, and I got to get used to him. So there's that change that is hard, And so the less you change, then the less disruption you have. And it means, too, that if you are changing something, you can do it purposeful and not simply by accident. Okay? One of our ministers said, the stability of the church for me meant 24 years of peace and the ability to lead the church through various changes. So he saw, you know, as the church changes and moves, and every church evolves and changes, this minister is changing with them. Long-term ministers enable the leadership to focus on the work of the church as opposed to the work of human resources and trying to find a new minister. I don't know about your church, but our church puts a lot of time and money into trying to find the right person for these jobs, in this position. I just want to go through this a little bit to show you what we do. First of all, we write up a job description, look at the educational and experience requirements we think we want in the job. We determine the range of pay that we can offer. This all takes time. We form a search committee made up of at least one elder and usually, you know, 7 or 8 members of the congregation. We contact Christian colleges, churches, and other entities by phone, writing, or visiting. We review resumes and start coming in. All of it takes time. We listen or watch audio and video recordings of presentations by the prospective minister. Sometimes we even visit the person's church undercover, you know, just to kind of get a feel for the way that person is relating to the congregation, to see if, because sometimes people can present something one way to you, and then when you go to the congregation, it's a little different over here. So we do that. When we get down to a few candidates, maybe 2 candidates, we pay for them to come out and visit and present to us. And then as we get closer, we may even have them come out again. And maybe their families come out with them. And we have, you know, the search committee, the elders, a group of general members, even the teens get a chance to interview the final candidates, because we want everybody kind of on board with this new person that we're finding. There's a lot of prayer that goes on, and there's a lot of time then spent in discussing and making that final decision. And you can see, if you're doing this every 2 years, you know, that's a huge amount of time and money to be doing that, that you could be focusing on other kinds of work. It just doesn't make sense. Long-term ministers contribute to the spiritual health of the church, number 7, and there's a building of trust. One of our ministers said, I would mention the blessing of having a church know you, the minister, and accept your areas of shortcoming, to be affirmed for your strengths rather than feeling complaints about the areas that you are not, that are not your strong suits. So one of the things we do is we look at the minister and we realize every minister has got strengths and weaknesses. You know, there are some things that they really shine at. There are other things maybe they're not so good at, you know. And we're not going to just lay it on this guy because he can't do this over here when he's doing this well over here. We want to encourage him and leverage our strengths. And so that's part of this long-term process. You get to know people. They don't have to be afraid of the fact that they aren't perfect in every way. You know, even if they have shortcomings, they can still serve. A long-term minister knows the sacred cows, those things that are, you know, every church has these little quirky things, right? And the long-term minister knows it. Sometimes you can stumble into it if you're a new guy on the block. One minister says, there's a knowledge of minefields to avoid and knowing how to handle them that only comes with time in the same church. It's true that there is temptation to grow tired of the same troubled people or issues and be tempted by the fantasy of greener grass on the other side of the fence. But I vote for the trouble you know over the troubles you don't know in a new place, because they will be there. And then the new minister coming into the church you left will have the same challenges to fit in and know the people. So, you know, the idea is there are these things that we have to be very sensitive about. I discovered in one church that I worked with that if I said, you know, this church is doing something and it's working really well for them, I would get voted down. No way. If I read a book and there was a great idea and I said, well, this guy says we could do this, get voted down. But if I came to the church and said, you know what, I just got a brainstorm, then all of a sudden they say, that's great, we want to do it, you know. And so I had to learn from this church how to present things so that they actually would work, you know. Long-term ministry enables the congregation to accept the minister as part of the family. We see our ministers as family. They're not just hirelings. They're not just out there to do a job. They are part of our congregational family. That means they've got issues too. They've got things they've got to wrestle with as they're developing their families and moving through life. One minister said, the stability for my kids was a huge positive. Another one said, it's set real expectations. We're here for the long term. We shouldn't plant asparagus, which takes 3 years to harvest, but we can plant it if we think we're going to be here long. So Shane said, basically, I came to Campbell and I started planting asparagus because I knew I was going to be here 3 or more years. I think another one said, I think it's not only helps them, but it helps me. It keeps you motivated and encouraged and feeling like what you're doing can matter in the future. On another note, it allowed me to raise my kids in a stable, healthy environment where they were able to create community for themselves that has lasted into adulthood. Another one said, it brought a sense of peace and also the ability to dig in and to be all in. I've never lived anywhere longer than 8 or 9 years, so staying in this location for 10 years plus and the advantage that provides socially with my family and ministry is exciting to look forward to and enjoy now. Another one said, it definitely has its ups and downs like any job or career. It's a blessing to see students come out of high school, grow up, get married, and have children. There are also seasons that you personally go through as a minister. When I came to this church, my two oldest children were 1 and 3. Now they're in junior high and high school. Then you have our new 2-year-old and how the church is a family and reaching out to them. Another 2 points that I want to make that I think are real benefits that aren't in your handout is that having multiple long-term ministers enables ministers to build a confidential system, support system among themselves. So I know Dave and I were talking about this. He says statistically, ministers like to have a confidant outside of the congregation that they're working with. But let me read to you what one of our ministers said. While this church often recognizes that ministers and I have been long-term in our roles, and each of those facts is fairly rare, I think it gets overlooked that for 2 staff members to be in the same church together for 1/4 of a century is exceedingly rare. But if that relationship is cordial, mutually supportive, and they are largely on the same page in terms of philosophy, theology, etc., then the positives for the church and for the individual ministers are doubled, if not more so. To have a confidant in ministry where you are largely on the same page makes a personal peace, support, and health for the church. Often a minister has no one to be completely honest with. Longevity with or without long-term co-ministers usually makes for the development of some such relationships. Ministry can be lonely, but long-term close relationships relieve that and help prevent burnout. Final thing I wanted to say is that it's not on your sheet, is that it's easier to hire new ministers when you've got a culture of long-term ministers. You know, ministers are worried about this. What happens if I get hired and then they don't like me and I'm gone in 18 months? You know, the long-term culture helps. One of our ministers said, the main thing that I was very clear in is my desire to stay somewhere long-term, and that was positively received by the leaders of the church. Another one said, so then this church came up after a number of short-term ministries. This minister said, so when this church came up, I was ready to go and stay in a good church for the sake of my family and a good fit for my sake of the church. Thank God it turned out that way. I had no intention of moving every 3 to 6 years. A good fit and longevity go hand in hand. So both are a great blessing to the minister, his family, and the congregation. Another minister said, it's a significant factor that our choice may be one of the strongest positive reasons to work here. There are very few churches that have ministers that stay so long. And every one of ours said this, that this was a long-term thing. One said it's a positive influence because most of the time longevity of ministers and leadership helps establish and promote health of the organization. We've worked at and attended churches without longevity, and it has negatively affected them. We know that longevity is one of the factors that leads towards successful ministry, and therefore we knew we wanted to set down long-term roots. And when this church required longevity, we were already there. Okay? And then, this is repeated over and over again. So let me close with just these thoughts. Long-term ministers are important for, 1, the work of the church, the health of the church, the health of the minister, the health of the minister's family. And as one of our long-term ministers said, it's a closing statement, so like a good long-term marriage, Nothing is better than a good long-term working relationship. Good for you, the minister, and good for the church family.
When I first became aware of the Campbell Church of Christ, I just moved to San Jose, and Steve and I met as youth ministers at that point in time. In 1980, the Campbell Church had 300 members. Today it has over 700. Long-term ministry works. My wife is a preacher's daughter. We did not intend to go into ministry, but God had other ideas. But my wife has taught me a lot of valuable lessons over time. One of those was that the relationship between a minister and a congregation is much like between a husband and a wife. And we have found over the years we've been in ministry that is true over and over consistently. There's a relationship of wooing that goes on. There's a dating, if you will. There is a marriage once there's a hire. There's a honeymoon period. And honeymoons can last from very short to very long periods of time. We were at San Jose 4.5 years, and we felt like it was a honeymoon the whole 4.5 years. We went somewhere else, and we felt like it was a divorce from the day one. We'll go into that. But the point is, it really does take two. It's not all on the minister. It's not all on the elders. It's not all on the congregation. It is working together. And so the idea of visionary leadership in all of this is key. It is key. And having the vision to hire the right people for ministry who have that same vision, who will help you support and move forward with that same vision, is what brings about not only stability in terms of a congregation and lack of conflict within the congregation, but it brings about stability of spirituality. It brings about the foundation for all kinds of growth that will really serve God well. We want to give some time for question and answer. You've heard a lot, and Dwayne had to shoehorn in so much so fast that I hope you got what he was trying to say, because it's extremely important, and it really is something that we need to give a lot of thought to, this non-competing business between elderships and ministers, but a mutual respect for one another's role and a mutual attendance to our individual roles. Questions or comments any of you have? Yes, please.
What's your perspective on a preacher who says, I believe God is calling me to another church?
God can do that.
Because I think, when I think about long-term ministry, there are obviously reasons why preachers leave.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very common reason that many ministers, including myself, have made decisions to leave a church when there has been intentions to stay there forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like your comment.
I think sometimes you have to ask the question, is God calling you to a church that has a higher salary and more benefits? Or is God calling you to a church where you really feel like that your gifts and your phase of life and their needs and their vision are ones that match up well, and that you can serve God there more than you can here? That it's time for someone else to come here and for you to go there. I think those are the kinds of things that have to be considered by a minister. But I think that those are kind of questions that have to be asked as well by an eldership when a minister comes and says, I feel God calling me elsewhere. Does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Other thoughts, comments, questions?
I think the right man at the wrong time will be a disaster. He will, like this gentleman was saying, when you feel like you're called somewhere else, maybe it's because you're not the right man at the right time for this particular group. But you would be the right man at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a marriage.
I think caveat is that if you feel that where you are in ministry to that church, you are at a point of completion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Again, what you believe, the reason that God sent you there in the first place, you've accomplished those things.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes there have been changes within the congregation and within the leadership that make it perhaps clear that it's no longer the place where you can serve God effectively. But I think that takes a real season of prayer, because it's easy for us to make knee-jerk reactions, isn't it? An emotional reaction.
Because I think that, excuse me for dominating this, but I think the thesis here is long-term ministry is good. Mm-hmm. But I think the footnote is, in most cases,
yes.
In other words, there are some cases where it's not good.
That's right.
Or it is fulfilled its goodness.
Yes. Yes. And sometimes there has to be short-term ministry between long-term ministry tenures. When I leave Ventura in about 14 months, I will have been there 29 years. And the person who follows me may or may not do 5 years or 10 years or 15 years. They may be the sacrificial lamb. That's a reality. And the history of long tenures has shown that you can do the best possible job you can imagine and devise and pray through to take the next person in, and that person may just fail, or the congregation may just not accept that person, and within 18 months they're gone, or even less, because the congregation just won't accept them. And so there are going to be times, under the best of circumstances, where that happens.
And just to say something more, sometimes there's little mini cultural differences in places, and where somebody looks really good where they're at, and so you hire them thinking they're going to do well where you're at, and they come join you, and then it just doesn't connect.
That's right.
Culture-wise.
That's right. Ellen, you have a couple.
Yeah, I was just going to say an answer to Jimmy's, just a comment about that situation. Sometimes when a preacher feels this calling, he may not realize that he's really the answer to someone's prayer of this new church that was praying for that very thing. So it may be, it may have nothing to do with those kind of dynamics at all. It's just somebody's answer to prayer.
God is at work despite us.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, of course I could be wrong about this, but I've always held the belief that ministry is a matter of calling, number one, you know, and God calls according to purposes, number two. But I've always said to people, you know, that, you know, from my, you know, evaluation and understanding, God never calls you away from. He always calls you to. You know, we're always going to have challenges, you know, that can discourage us, that make us want to leave. You know, that type of thing. But if we understand that God's calling is always to a purpose, you know, to a ministry, then we'll know when God is actually calling, or whether or not our circumstances actually, you know, so. You know, that type of thing. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I have always felt, I see members that may jump up because there's trouble in a church or situations, relationships uncomfortable, and they just run, you know, and as a result, you know, it's what that proverb says, the way of the transgressor is hard. You know, if you don't go through a situation, you're going to do it again. You're going to go through it again. And so we have to face the challenges that brings about maturity. And that applies even to leaders. You know, we have to deal with the storms of ministry. And so we can know eventually, you know, that God may be summoning us to another work, you know, as opposed to us leaving because of discomfort.
Yes.
Well, I just want to ask you a question. Wouldn't the answer to this kind of depend on how you define terms like church, ministry, etc.? You know, it just seems that depends on what paradigm you have concerning church would determine how these kind of questions would be answered.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I think what I hear you saying is, just because you leave a congregation doesn't mean you're interrupting your ministry. Mm-hmm. So in other words, our mentality is congregational. Mm-hmm. So we say long-term congregational ministry. But is that what you're saying?
Of course, what I'm saying.
Because the whole other issue is guys who are just leaving preaching.
Yeah. Yes.
That's another issue. But if you go from a congregation to another congregation, are you really not doing long-term ministry? But I think here it's being defined as congregationally long-term.
Yes.
I would say that's a facet of what I was talking about. Because if you define the idea of church more kingdom than congregation, you might be in the ministry for a long term. But then I think it kind of piggybacks on what Dr. Renner was talking about. You have the idea of purpose. You know, and if your idea of ministry has to do with of preaching, has to do with proclaiming and taking territory, then, you know, if God has called you purposefully to a certain territory and you have not done that, you know what I'm saying? So you may be good congregationally, but horrible kingdom, or you could be great kingdom, horrible congregationally. And, of course, it's all kind of permutations of those ideas.
Sure.
So when you talk about, even I get that we're taking a corporate paradigm of ministry, i.e. hire, fire, quit, leave, tenure, employment over, you know, it's kind of a corporate model. I don't have a problem with the model. I'm saying once you start looking at it that way, then absolutely, you know, professional ministry, and I think it was, I don't know if it was you, Dave, but I mean, it was you talked about the idea of leaving for better benefits for your family, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that's kind of the job of those who are professional preachers to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm not speaking pejoratively of that. But those who are more missional, it's a different idea of what I'm just embedded in this. So I'm here until, you know, if I have to work for McDonald's, I'm here.
Yeah.
And I think both of those are viable models. So it seems like a lot of the answers are kind of crossing one another.
I think the thing that the three of us really want to emphasize is that if the eldership of a congregation and the congregation as a whole and a given minister, whatever his role may be, are looking to join hands and join arms as a spiritual family, the person, the minister, can be very professional, but he or she will be looking for a place of family where they're no longer looked at as an employee, where there's not a competitiveness between elders and ministers, where there is a joining of hearts and lives for the long term, because that's the way family is. We're here for each other for the long term, and if we are relating to one another that way, then it establishes an environment where all the relationships then are different, and because of that, we are enabled and we look at it as the long term, because this is family. We have a responsibility to God, and we're going to live that out together for God, with God, and with our brothers and sisters in God. We've run way over time. Thank you so much for being here. We'll pick this up tomorrow.